Welcome to the podcast, Your Time with James Sweetman. Each week, my guests and I share stories, challenges, and vulnerabilities, all with the aim of helping us to live in a more soulful, authentic, and integrated way. So thank you for tuning in. Let's jump into this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this, the final episode in the current series of my podcast. I don't know where the last few months have gone. As I'm sure you can imagine, a significant amount of work goes into producing these weekly episodes, and there were 12 in this last series. So to keep my content fresh and hopefully insightful, I'm taking a pause for a few weeks. I'm already lining up some great guests and, of course, identifying some new themes to explore in the next series. This week, I'm sort of looping back to where this current series started. You might remember that I kicked off at the end of October with an episode I titled Why My Sabbatical Wasn't Enough. In it, I spoke about how my real challenge was overthinking. I know from clients I work with and from feedback on that episode that this is something that many people can relate to, a mind that simply won't switch off. It's something I work on purposefully. So this week, I'll take you through 8 tips and strategies to avoid getting stuck in the trap of overthinking. I'm going to start, though, with a bit of thinking about thinking. It's said that we think on average about 70,000 thoughts a day, but that 80% of those thoughts are the same every day. That's sort of a frightening statistic, but sort of true when you think about it. We certainly have habits of thinking. We think about ourselves and others and situations and work in a habitual way. And all behavioural habits have to be preceded by thinking habits. Some thoughts are positive and empowering, others negative and fear-based. Our thoughts shape our reality. They're the seeds of everything we do. Over 2,000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius stated that the happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. However, most people have little conscious awareness of their thoughts, let alone the quality of them. I think, therefore I am, as the French philosopher René Descartes declared back in 1637. For most of us, our minds are untrained. We put far more effort into physical fitness than mental fitness. We ruminate on past events in an attempt to understand perplexing behaviour or to change what happened. Other thoughts spin and spiral. Some thoughts get stuck in a loop, and many more are projected onto others. As I always say, the worst troll is the one that lives in our head. So what's overthinking? Well, the classic definition is to think about something too much or for too long. It's when you simply can't switch off your thinking mind. And let's face it, we never overthink positive or empowering thoughts. Overthinking is always about chewing over concerns, incessant worrying, or analysing issues to the point of paralysis. Overthinking can be a byproduct of depression or anxiety, and if this is the case, it makes sense to look at these underpinning issues or to seek assistance from a professional. This is where counselling is beneficial, as I found myself over the years. Before overthinking gets a bad rap this week, let's remember that if we're facing a tough decision or dealing with a lot, it's only natural for us to do a lot of thinking. We can run through different scenarios in our minds, assess risks, weigh up pros and cons, and contemplate consequences. This is contingency thinking, and it makes sense. What I tend to find is different with this type of thinking is that it's focused on a particular goal or problem we wish to solve. So our thinking is funneled, as opposed to being just stuck in the habit of overthinking, where we're rehashing the past or worried about the future in a more general sense. For me, the distinguishing factor is the underlying emotion. Unhelpful overthinking is driven by fear, whereas contingency thinking, or even intuition, is harnessing the power of the mind for a particular purpose or focus. So how do you know if overthinking is an issue for you? Well, let's look at some of the common symptoms. The most obvious one is where we worry excessively about the future, and as a result, we are unable to enjoy the present. With incessant worrying, you constantly anticipate and stress about many things, all under the umbrella heading of how your life is going wrong or how life is not working out as you would like it to. Persistent worrying involves negative, often catastrophic predictions about the future. Thoughts may include things such as, oh, I'll get sick, I know I will, or I won't have enough money to retire, I'll go to pieces if I'm asked to deliver a presentation, I won't get the job. The list is endless. We can always find something to worry about. The other type of overthinking is where we look behind us and ruminate on the past. We rehash events that have taken place and we weigh ourselves down with negative self-judgment. This is especially common with perfectionists, how we have not lived up to our own impossibly high standards, and this can contribute to depression and the tendency to push other people away. If I'm being really honest, this is one of my patterns. When I'm overthinking, I'm always self-isolating. Like worrying, when we ruminate about the past, we can always find something to replay in our heads. We might get stuck on thoughts such as, I shouldn't have said those things, they'll think I'm an idiot, I shouldn't have left the relationship, or she said I wasn't a good friend and maybe she was right. Another symptom of overthinking is being constantly concerned about what others think of you, that fear of negative judgment that is at the heart of imposter syndrome. A variation of this is our negative self-talk. We are our own harshest critic. We not only talk ourselves down, but we think ourselves down too. I remember in a session with my own counsellor a while ago, he said to me that I had a tendency to judge myself based on my worst thoughts, and he was right. I judge myself as being a bad person because I think negative thoughts about myself and others on occasion. But of course, this is not balanced. Life is not about constantly just thinking positively. We will have negative thoughts. We just don't want them to control us or darken the lens through which we see the world. As I mentioned in a previous episode, we have a natural negative bias. It's part of our defense mechanism. We scan the environment for potential threats, not just physical threats, but threats to our perceived sense of self. That's why we will ignore compliments or positive feedback, because nothing bad happens if we do. But we cannot take the chance in ignoring negative feedback or input. Another symptom of overthinking is overanalysis. It's the opposite of striking whilst the iron is hot. We talk ourselves out of taking action or making a decision. We tie ourselves up in knots with our thinking. So I'm quite sure we've all experienced some or probably all of those symptoms. I know I have, and far more frequently than I'd like. My overthinking, my incessant worrying, being self-critical, ruminating on past events, catastrophizing about the future, has led me to feeling like a victim or a martyr, two very disempowered states. Not to mention the stress and sense of exhaustion that goes with it. As I mentioned before, that exhaustion because of overthinking was the primary cause of my burnout. For many of us, and I'm certainly speaking about myself here, overthinking has become a habit. The only way we change a habit is by taking conscious action. In the short term, it will feel strange, but if we persevere, we can change our habitual tendencies. If we don't think about what we're trying to do purposefully, we will do what we've always done. So what can we do to change or cease our habit of overthinking? I've 8 tips to share with you. I practice all of these on a regular basis, and they certainly help. There are 2 or 3 techniques in particular that I find especially helpful, and I'll reference them too. But as ever, I want to give you a wide range of options to try out. So the first tip is that we do have to notice or become aware of when we get stuck in our own head. We can only change a habit when we know we're stuck in that habit, in this case, our tendency to overthink. So tip 1 is noticing when you're stuck in your head. How do you know when you're overthinking? It can become such a habit that we don't even recognize when we're doing it. So we have to start by paying attention. What are the situations or circumstances that tend to trigger your pattern of overthinking? Is it a specific work situation, a person, a time of the day? I know for some people it can be nighttime or maybe 5 p.m. on a Sunday evening when Sunday night syndrome kicks in, that foreboding feeling of the new working week lying ahead. Are there physical aspects to your overthinking? Immobility, as I mentioned, is one of mine. Or do you scowl? Another one of mine is that I zone out. I literally tune the world out because I get quite literally lost in my own thoughts. When we are overthinking, we are often trying to rationalize an emotional situation. It is a futile attempt on our part to try to understand what went on or figure out why someone has behaved in a certain way when their behaviour may not be rational or logical. I often describe this like gears in a car or on a bicycle and they're slipping. You're working and working at your thinking but getting nowhere. You're quite literally going around in circles. Very soon we can get stressed out, or even worse, we'll get stressed about being stressed or frustrated by the fact that we are frustrated. All this is fueled by our unconscious overthinking. So it's only when we notice our pattern can we do something about it. Tip number two, and the first real practical tip, is what I call lead with the body. So if we're thinking about a problem or if we're thinking about thinking, doing more thinking about it is never really going to work. So the first thing I try to do is move. I don't know about you, but when I'm in that overthinking spiral, I'm usually quite immobile. So it makes sense to move the body. And as I say, I call this leading with the body. Move the body and the mind will follow. Going for a walk, I usually find, is the simplest solution. I then try to bring my other senses into play. You know, what am I seeing? What am I hearing, smelling? What can I touch? If I raise my attention on my senses, I'm less likely to dwell on thoughts. As regular listeners will know, I'm a big fan of yoga. It gets me out of my head and into my body and has benefited me in a number of ways, not least of which is at least the temporary parking of my tendency to overthink. It's more difficult then to rehash or relive yesterday or worry about tomorrow when we're focused on doing something in the present. Tip number three is getting into the witness position or self-distancing. So this is where we begin to notice ourselves when we're overthinking, and the intention is to self-distance, or what I sometimes call moving into the witness protection program. For me, overthinking is like digging a big hole around my feet. The more I dig, the more I think, the more immersed I am in the issue. I'm getting deeper and deeper into what is usually a bottomless pit. I get into the witness position when I try to take a step back and see the bigger picture. You know, as I say, this is a strategy that's also known as self-distancing. You observe whatever difficult experience you're ruminating about or worrying about as if you're a fly on the wall rather than directly involved. It can also help to ponder what advice you might give a friend if they were stuck in the same pattern of overthinking. I know that's one that my husband Brian will throw at me on occasion. How would I coach a client who was running a similar pattern? What this technique does is get us out of our heads, which is exactly what we want when we're overthinking. Tip number four is the if-then technique. When you know your pattern or can see the early warning signals of overthinking, it's useful to have an if-then strategy. So what do I mean by that? So for example, if I'm being self-critical, then let me take some conscious breaths or focus on an achievement or something I'm proud of. Or if I'm worrying, then let me acknowledge that this is something I care about. But rather than focusing on the worst outcome, which is usually the pattern with worry, let me focus just for a moment or consider the best outcome or what's likely to happen. Rather than overthinking being the long, slippery slide that only leads to stress, the if-then technique helps us to sidestep it before it builds momentum. This is one that I find particularly helpful. If overthinking can be a cul-de-sac, the if-then strategy gives us a fork in the road. For me, my if-then strategies are often based around ways I can distract myself from my overthinking habit. If I feel myself sinking into self-absorption and overthinking, then I'll reach out to a friend or talk to someone. Let's remember that most of the time our overthinking is about ourselves. It can be ego-driven. We can get wrapped up in ourselves and our thinking to the point of self-absorption. By putting our focus on another person, we're getting over ourselves. I've adapted this technique when working with presentation skills or interview skills clients. It's easy to overthink and get wrapped up in our nerves and fire imposter syndrome before a presentation or an interview. We can have so many thoughts in our heads that our brains will go blank. Just like a laptop that has been running too many programs, our brains crash. But let's remember that an audience at a presentation or interviewers are not interested in how you're feeling. Your job in those situations is to communicate. Not only is overthinking a distraction from what we're there to do, it can also be a bit indulgent. So questions such as, how can I be of service? How can I add value here? Or how can I demonstrate my eagerness? They will all get us out of our heads and help us to put our focus on someone else. This leads neatly into tip number 5, which is about changing the question structure in our mind that fuels overthinking, in particular, getting away from why. So why is this happening to me? Why me? Why are they doing that? Why is he not doing this? As I sometimes say, why leads to whine. Now, why questions can be useful in the right context. We might think of Simon Sinek and his famous adage of finding your why, your underlying motivation. But why questions can run riot and are often at the heart of overthinking. They can be our attempt to comprehend something that may not be rational or logical. Rather than why, a question construct that is more effective in these overthinking situations is, how can I? This is the construct that was the backbone of my book, SOAR, my coaching book. So, for example, how can I move forward? How can I be more compassionate? We focus on what it is we want in the situation, our desired result, and then add in, how can I, before it. It creates a different energy. It shifts our minds from unproductive ruminating to empowered planning. Why is a dead end? How leads to action? Why can easily lead to guilt or defensiveness when directed towards others? You know, why didn't you make your bed? Why did you cook that? Why did that happen? But it has the same effect when we ask it internally, when we direct the why towards ourselves. We can also change why to who. This is another one of my go-to strategies. Who do I want to be in this situation? This for me is a technique that really works because it elevates my thinking from a doing to a being level. As Einstein said, the same level of thinking that created the problem won't resolve it. So, for example, I have an issue at the moment that I've been overthinking about, you know, where a client organization owes me money and it's been outstanding for months. You know, it's natural but not helpful for me to dwell on it. So who do I want to be in this situation is the question I've been asking myself. Professional, you know, even if they're not, maybe. Assertive, factual, clinical. So like shifting from why to how, shifting to who brings with it a sense of empowerment and control. Tip number 6 for sidestepping our tendency to overthink is to write it out. Another favourite one of mine. We all know the benefits of journaling or writing things down. From a time management perspective, I always say ink it, don't think it. This is a basic organisational skill, but it also has benefits because it's a relief valve for the mind. If I put my worries or concerns down on a page, it's like I'm extracting them from my head. It helps to change perspective and gets us into the witness position, where we can observe in a more rational way what is bouncing around our heads like a pinball. If you're plagued by something at the minute, try spending some time writing about it. I find the action of writing with a pen more effective than typing. As I say, it helps to gain a fresh perspective, and it also helps with self-distancing that I mentioned earlier. But what I also find is it usually creates the space for insights or ideas. You know, it's like when I write something down, I've opened up my mind for fresh and more effective thinking. I did this exercise purposely a few weeks ago with a business issue that was dragging on through no fault of my own, one where I felt powerless and that was triggering values for me in a negative way. I was aware that I was angry, which is a natural and valid response, but being consumed by it was unhealthy for me. Writing about it, I was reminded of the Mark Twain quote about anger being like a poison that I'm drinking in the hope that it kills someone else. It was a useful prompt for me to do some personal development work, to clear what was going on inside me. As I've said before, you know, I will write it out, W-R-I-T-E, so I can write it out, R-I-G-H-T. Something else I've also tried when writing about an issue is allowing myself to think about the worst case scenario. I look at my fear or worry right in the eye, which is usually something we don't necessarily do with overthinking. You know, overthinking can be like the plane that constantly circles the airport without ever landing, without looking at the issue, or as we'll see too, the emotion head on. So I asked myself, what's the worst that could happen? And would I survive it, or would I be okay if it did happen? This technique does require a little bravery, but when I've asked it of myself, it has certainly helped. Another personal example there was around hospital tests. Would I be okay if they turned out not to be what I would have hoped? Well, I'd find a way of coming to terms with it. I find looking at fear head on takes the sting out of overthinking. It removes the heart of overthinking and helps quieten my mind. Overthinking is synonymous with putting up our defences. But what are we really defending? That's a deep one, you know, and it links in with the next tip, which is all about allowing ourselves to feel our feelings. So ruminating on an issue is not the same as feeling your feelings. I know I will stay in my head rather than experience my feelings on some topics. Just as it's easier for people to hate those who are different from them instead of feeling their own pain. We'll all have developed strategies for avoiding painful emotions. And as I say, for me, overthinking is one of them. Sometimes we need a good cry, pound a pillow or scream to deal with the emotion that overthinking stirs and churns up, but then traps. We can think and think and think without ever really acknowledging the underlying emotion, the fear or the hurt. Sometimes I'll ask a coaching client who is stuck in their head, and how did that make you feel? And of course, this can bring emotions to the surface. But that emotion has to be released before healing can begin. Emotions are like waves. They will pass. And that's the same with difficult emotions too. Overthinking will continue to fuel emotions. Spiraling thoughts that fuel heavy emotions will warp our worldview. As Eckhart Tolle says, pretty soon we'll be acting out of our pain body. We know only hurt people hurt people. But so often we're hurting ourselves by overthinking and not allowing ourselves to feel the pain, the underlying hurt or the fear. The last tip is about challenging your thoughts, and this is another favourite one of mine. I'm a big fan of the American teacher and author Byron Katie, and I know some of you will be familiar with her work that is actually called The Work. If you're not familiar with her, there are plenty of resources online, including on YouTube. She's most famous for the simple construct of three questions and a turnaround that for me act like a scalpel for cutting out unhelpful thoughts. Her work can appear blunt or harsh, but over the years I found it to be so helpful when it comes to challenging my own thoughts, especially thoughts I dwell on and that make me feel bad. I had a client recently who was so upset over work because of a difficult client she was dealing with. She was running the pattern that the client would leave and then she'd be fired. This thought was consuming her, stressing her out, upsetting her. In this situation, the ins and outs of the client's actions were secondary. We focused on sorting out her thinking. The client will leave and I'll be fired. Well, is that true? I asked her. She couldn't say it was absolutely true, but her body, her emotions responded as if it was true. I think that's where we get the adage, the truth will set you free. Another of Byron Katie's questions is, who would you be without the thought? The client responded, well, I'd be calmer, professional, factual. She now had an alternative, or at minimum, a little space in her head to contemplate an alternative, less catastrophizing thought. And of course, when our thinking changes, our feelings follow suit. Over the years, I found that the lies we tell ourselves, the overthinking, the dwelling on the negative or the worst that could happen, it was the number one cause of my stress. When I challenge my emotional, reactive, habitual thoughts with a rational and evidence-based perspective, they rarely stand up. They dissolve and something more true emerges. Remember that your emotions will interfere with your ability to look at situations objectively. Take a step back and look at the evidence. What evidence do you have that your thought is true? What evidence do you have that your thought isn't true? Thoughts are just thoughts. And we have the freedom to choose the thoughts that serve us best. Challenging our thoughts in this way can bring us into the territory of forgiveness. We often expend energy on what ifs and should haves. We know we can't change the past, but we can change the meaning we give it. We can assess past events through a learning lens so we don't repeat mistakes or regrets. We can change the story. We can let go, release, or take back the power we unconsciously gave away to others. When the topic of forgiveness arises, I'll always share the Jerry Jampolsky quote, forgiveness is letting go of the hope that the past could have been any different. So before I share some final reflections on overthinking, let me do a quick recap on the 8 strategies we've gone through. First up was noticing your pattern, noticing when you're overthinking, what your triggers are, what your tendencies are. When you are aware, well, then you can do something about it. Remember, overthinking is a habit, and like any habit, we can only change it when we're conscious that we're doing it. But it's particularly tricky with thinking habits because we cannot see them. So we have to pay attention to the emotions or behaviors we exhibit, the symptoms of overthinking. The second tip and the first suggested action is to lead with the body. Move, because if you're like me, you'll tend to be immobile and self-isolating when overthinking. Tip number three was to move into the witness position or to self-distance. We want to give ourselves a little perspective so we can look at the issue at the heart of our overthinking more objectively. Next up was the if-then strategy. If I notice I'm overthinking, then I will do something purposeful. I'm acting on the early warning signals. It might be as simple as, if I'm overthinking and self-isolating, then I'll go for a walk or phone a friend. Tip five for combating overthinking was to change the question, in particular to get away from why. More effective and empowered question constructs are how can I and who. As I said in my book Soar, thinking is just questions and answers in our heads. If I change the question, I'll get a different answer. Tip six was to write it out. Get the thoughts out of your head and down on the page where you can assess them. And as I said, this seems to create some space in our minds for more action or solution-oriented thinking. I know it certainly does for me. Tip seven was to get brave and allow ourselves to feel the emotion. Remember, overthinking is often an attempt to avoid our feelings, and that's never healthy in the long term. Remember, emotions, even the difficult ones, will pass. And then the final tip was to challenge your thoughts with that simple Byron Katie question, is it true? This ushers in the rational mind to assess what is usually an emotional scenario. And as the Bible says, the truth will set you free. So there's my 8 tips for combating overthinking. I've not mentioned conscious breathing, mindfulness or meditation as strategies, because I think just offering them up can be a bit glib. They're the easy go-to. Of course, mindfulness and meditation and conscious breathing are beneficial. They help us to observe the cacophony of thoughts in our heads and to connect with something deeper, our inner wisdom, inspiration, or a sense of peace. Meditation teaches us to view our thoughts like clouds just drifting in and out. Some are light and airy, others dark and ominous. Just as the expansive blue sky holds the shifting clouds, we can come to know that we're always more than our thoughts. We can also view our thoughts like movies playing on a screen in our mind. Common sense says that if I'm watching a movie I don't like, I should switch it off. But that's easier when the movie's on the television. It's far tougher when it's playing in our heads. And we play movies in our minds all the time. Some are pleasant and upbeat, memories of fun times and events eagerly awaited. Others are imagined disasters, tragedies and dramas. The most common movie of all is the box set called Worry. We imagine every worst-case scenario. We play mind reader, going inside other people's heads and doing their thinking for them. We hand out scripts so others can judge us in the harshest way possible. Whilst the sensations of worry and fear in our bodies are very real, the root cause is our thinking and the images we run in our minds. Our emotions are stimulated by what we are thinking about, irrespective of whether our thinking is present and sense-based or a mind movie called Baggage or Worry. Asking the question, is this real or is it a movie in my head, allows us to reclaim the remote control and, if we so choose, to press stop and eject. As the director of our lives, we get to determine what gets our attention. We become prisoners to our thoughts when we identify with them. Just because we think it doesn't mean it's true or real. Just because we think it doesn't mean we have to believe it. We are the thinker and the observer of our thoughts. We're running the show. The value we place in our thoughts, how significant we believe them to be, determines our life experience. The uplifting, loving and gratitude-based thoughts are worth dwelling on because they empower us. We can let other thoughts drift by. We won't judge them. In fact, we'll try not to give them a second thought. So that's it for this week and for this series of podcast episodes. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you found this week's tips on overthinking helpful, and that insights and tips I've shared over the last 12 weeks, that they were helpful too. I want to give a special word of thanks to Evan Balfe, who's been a tremendous support on the technical side in producing this series of podcast episodes. He's added real value to the podcast and made my life much easier too. So as I said at the outset, I'm taking a pause for a few weeks, but I'll be back with a new series of episodes in the spring. So until next time, my friends. Thank you for listening this week. If you enjoyed this episode and have a moment, please rate, review and subscribe if you haven't already. And maybe you'd like to share it with a friend too. For more information about me, James Sweetman, my coaching services, workshops, books, and for more podcast episodes, be sure to visit jamessweetman.com.